My name is Victor Kubik, and welcome to another weekly edition of the Inside United podcast. Today, our guest is Len Martin, who is pastor of three congregations in Ohio, Columbus, Cambridge, and Mansfield. But today, we will see him as he takes on a new additional role in the church as the newly elected chairman of the Council of Elders of the United Church of God. Welcome to Inside United, Len.
Thank you very much, Vic. It's a pleasure to be here.
What thoughts crossed your mind when you were selected for this role?
Well, Vic, I was stunned, to be quite honest with you. I've served on the council for 2 years, never anticipated being selected as chairman. So when it happened, I really didn't know what to say. As I mentioned to your staff this morning, I was happy we were on a WebEx, because as soon as we took a break, I was able to just get on my knees. My hands were shaking, and I just asked God to help me, and I know He will. My initial thoughts and my continued thoughts are simply to keep asking God to direct the council to do the things according to His will and not our own, and grant us all patience when we don't see exactly what God is doing.
Tell us about your background and your experience, maybe your early days in the church. I know that people would like to know, what is his experience and what can he bring?
Well, I came into the church at age 10 with my mother and three sisters. My father never had an interest in the church. God never called him. But every year he'd go with us to the Feast of Tabernacles, so we had a good family relationship in that regard. My wife, Julie, she was born and raised in the church. Her mother and my mother were very good friends, and we lived in the same city in Michigan. And so there were many occasions when her family was over visiting at our home. And over time, Julie and I developed a friendship that would eventually lead to our marriage. We just had our 32nd anniversary this past Friday. Julie and I have 5 children. They all attend UCG congregations. Our oldest son and his wife attend in Des Moines, Iowa. Our second son and his wife attend in Flint, Michigan. Our next 2 sons and our daughter currently live at home, and they generally go wherever Dad is going that Sabbath, which, as I've mentioned, for the last 12 weeks was our living room because we were webcasting. But I graduated high school in 1980. I went on to college, first to be an architect. And over the years, I would eventually receive undergraduate degrees in engineering and information technology, and also obtained an MBA in finance. Over the years, I worked several years in electrical engineering and several years in mechanical engineering before I settled in a career as an IT director for a large consulting engineering firm. I was ordained an elder in 1999, and then, as you know, Vic, you called me in March of 2011, asked if I'd consider coming into the full-time ministry. And at that time, I was the regional brokerage supervision manager for J.P. Morgan Chase. So as you can see, I have a rather diverse background of experience.
People want to know what your interests are. What types of things do you find interesting? And also, in connection with the Word of God and preaching as a pastor, what are your specialty interests?
Well, personally, I'm a fix-it kind of person. I enjoy fixing things. I actually find a certain amount of satisfaction working on cars, help my kids with their vehicles. I do enjoy working on them. I enjoy working on projects around the house and doing home remodeling. I also enjoy hunting. I enjoy the outdoors. I think what I enjoy most about it is just being outdoors. I can sit outdoors and enjoy the peace and the solitude of the woods. And it gives you a lot of time for reflection and meditation and prayer. Also, in my youth, I was an avid long-distance runner, and I'm starting to get back into that again. So those are some of the personal hobbies and interests that I have. My daily routine usually starts with prayer in the morning, and then usually a lot of time just reading and studying. I think as most pastors, we're all, from 1 week to the next, working on the next sermon, asking God for direction and where we're going and what the congregation needs. So I do spend a fair amount of time just reading, and that gives me a lot of opportunities to just develop messages.
Since you've had experience with finance and, business in certain areas, I'd like you to tell me about your vision of what you would like to see the council do and how you would like to direct it.
Okay, let me first talk about what the role of the council, what its responsibilities are. I think it'd be good to begin with that so that it helps frame what I want to say. The council is the equivalent of a corporate board of directors. A lot of people are probably familiar with that. And so the main goal of our council is similar to what we might find with a corporate board of directors. The first thing is important to note that the council is appointed by the GCE. All the elders in the church appoint the council. And so it's first the council's responsibility to listen to and to report to the general conference. That's certainly one of their primary goals. The council has to keep the mission clearly in focus. That's certainly an objective that no matter what the business at hand is, it's important that we remember what our mission is and that it all comes back to helping us achieve that mission. As I've often said, members of the council, just like any group of people, as you come together to discuss things, we may differ at times on how to achieve that mission, but the mission never changes. So we can have a discussion on the hows, but it doesn't change the mission. And likewise, the members of the council might differ at times on which part of that mission, you know, preparing the people, preaching the gospel, which part gets the most amount of the resources. And again, it's a healthy discussion to have that. It still doesn't change the mission, but those are some of the things the council has to do. Third, it's important that the council remain focused on long-term planning. The long-term strategic planning. The council should leave the day-to-day operations in the hands of the administration, and you, Vic, as president, have that primary responsibility here at the home office to drive those day-to-day activities. And so the council appoints you to do that, and the council's job is to just interface with you, see what we can do to help you. As I've said to you on phone calls, you know, we want you to be a success, because if you're successful, the whole organization is successful. And as you mentioned, fiduciary oversight or stewardship is another aspect. The council is legally responsible to manage and protect the assets of the church. It is given to them to do. And so while it's your day-to-day operations that are under your authority, the council then gets from you regular reports on how things are going. And the council may ask you to clarify or ask questions as we seek to fulfill our responsibility as fiduciaries. So those are just a few of the many responsibilities the council has. But you asked about my goals for the council. Well, at the end of the day, the chairman is still only one man of 12. He really has no more power or authority than any other man in that room. He's just one of 12. When manners are balloted upon, the chairman gets one ballot. So it's important that, you know, the chairman understands that responsibility. And so I look at my goals as being, number one, to be a good facilitator, to help facilitate the discussions of the council meetings when we're having them, those deliberations, and just help those meetings to go smoothly, to be organized, to make sure that we're ready, just to maintain that spirit and unity and cooperation amongst that group of 12 men who all have very diverse backgrounds, to allow differing of opinions, because some things in life aren't right or wrong. They're just different. And we have to embrace that they're different. And as we work together as a council, that's what I hope to achieve, is that we can allow for those differences and yet still stay focused on achieving the mission. And you can actually draw from that the fact that there's wisdom in that, right? So, but as we can approach the ability to sit down and talk and understand that because I disagree with you on a point, has nothing to do with your righteousness, your conversion. It's just we disagree on a point. And the better we can be at just calmly discussing, and because over time, you know, we reach consensus. And I used to work at a company where we had a big sign in our conference room on what consensus was. And we defined it as consensus is when we reach a decision I can live with. It doesn't mean I get everything I want. But this is one I can live with, and then I can walk out and support. And the better we get at understanding that, the better we realize we're not going to get everything the way we want it, but we reach something that we can all get behind. And that's something I think over the years we've seen it done well, and sometimes maybe not as well. So I hope we can just keep working in that direction of true consensus building.
Now I'd like to hear about some specific areas, though we've gone through some general ways in which we operate. But there are various committees of the council, and that's where the work is done. I would like you to share with our audience of what you feel perhaps strongly about and where you'd like to see us go.
Well, as far as individual committees, you know, I had the opportunity in the 2 years before being chairman, I served on roles and rules, I served on strategic planning and finance, and I also served on doctrine. I think the overall goal of each of the committees really is, you know, how is what we're doing, going back to the mission, helping to achieve that. So we'll talk a little bit about doctrine. You know, we had a bit of a backlog when I came on a couple years ago. Our doctrinal committee chair at the time, Mario, did a tremendous job of just really staying honest to just, you know, you take this one, you take this one, you take this one, and let's report back and let's keep moving forward. And doctrine is a challenging thing because it really gets you back to the core of what can we absolutely prove, like with beyond a shadow of a doubt, and what things, you know, well, I guess I'll call them a gray area, but they're gray only because we don't have God's mind, right? If we had God's mind, it wouldn't be gray, but we don't. And so trying to give latitude to what we absolutely know and then give space for those things that, you know, we would just say, we'll just kind of leave this at that point. Roles and rules is tedious in a different fashion. Some people get bored with it. It's like we had a tremendous job with Rainer Saloma the last couple of years and keeping that moving forward. But it does require a lot of attention to details and commas and semicolons and where, you know, and that type of documentation, which some people don't enjoy at all, but it's necessary.
But you might want to tell us, what does roles and rules do? I know some of the things they were working on was like relationships with other churches, creating documents that would define that. Also, it had to do with rules within our own structure, amendments to that.
Yeah, so roles and rules has a broad variety of everything that goes on in the council. It's looking at that in light of our governing documents, or, you know, our bylaws and our constitution, things that probably most people don't pay much attention to, but we are a corporation. We do have to abide by what we've said we're going to do. And so roles and rules will make sure, first of all, that we're following our governing documents, that we're doing things as we say we're going to. And then certainly as amendments come through, they're a good cross check. You know, here's an amendment coming through, but there's a conflict with something else over here. And so they're a good resource in that regard. Last year, the last couple years, and actually maybe going back 3 years ago, there was this long effort to work on a document that had to do with relationships with other groups that, you know, took several years, several iterations. Last year, a whole year ago, it was given to the entire GCE for comment. It's one of the first times I really remember a whole 1 year of here's the document. Give us your comments. And so then that document, after those comments were taken and roles and rules made the edits, they presented it to the council. The council approved it and it went to the GCE. I'm never an advocate for, you know, policy on demand. If you make something too quick, it's usually wrong. So if something begins to develop that needs work, we often will remand it to one of the committees and say, go work on it and then bring it back where it's been fleshed out and vetted against everything. And so there's something well thought out, because 12 guys can't do that in a room in a matter of 3 or 4 days when we get together.
I know that preaching the gospel, and we are doing it through television. We have a major magazine, I feel, a very well-designed, very well-written magazine of 300, and I think this coming issue is 313,000 copies are being sent out, or at least printed. We also have the internet, which is a kind of repository for other churches, who oftentimes say, hey, if you want to know what the Sabbatarian churches preach on this subject, go to ucg.org, because they have it. But Len, I know that you have examined and looked over what media does, and that's our public proclamation. Thoughts?
I remember when the America the Time Is Now came to Columbus a few years ago, and I remember after the presentation talking at that time about I didn't feel the society was ready. Life was good. People were happy. It's a good message, but they didn't feel a call to action. I think one of the things that we could be better prepared for is times of crisis, to be ready with that strong message. As we saw with this COVID event, everybody, I mean, not just us, but you could turn on the radio and every preacher on the radio was going to Nehemiah and they were going to Jeremiah and they were trying to make sense of what was going on in the world today. And so some of it's just not maybe that the message is wrong. It's just maybe the timing of it. People aren't ready. You know, the way I look at it is, as you mentioned, God does the calling. We have no control over that, right? So we all desire church growth physically, but one thing we can control is spiritual growth. That is something that each individual can do. I've often shared in congregations how I describe my role as a pastor. I liken it to a farmer who's cultivating fertile ground. And that if the congregation can become fertile ground, just full of nutrients, and that when God calls somebody, he knows I can bring them there and I can plant them there. And then he can finish the work he started in that person through the congregation because it's a fertile, healthy place for that person. So those are things, bringing it to a very personal level, that individuals can do their part to be that congregation where God can plant people. And through this COVID thing, as I've been webcasting from home and our congregations have been home, I've given a few messages on when we get back together. I hope we appreciate, you know, Hebrews 10:24 and 10:25, that, you know, 25 is one we always quote that says not to forsake the assembling of yourselves together as is the manner of some. But 24, you know, Hebrews 10:24 says that you would come together to stir up love and good works. Then it goes into not forsaking the assembly. And I've tried to hammer that home. Like, can we, when we get back together, can we be a congregation that is that place that when God says, okay, they're ready, I'll call people, I can plant them right there. So that we can do. And so there's the spiritual growth element that can ultimately lead to a physical growth element if that's what God's planning to do. So as we bring it back to media, you know, there's two sides of that. You know, is the message the right message? And it may be, is it the right time going forward? Those are the kind of questions that the media committee, along with those that are in media and administration, should just take a step back at it. You know, is there something we should do differently? Just try something else, just to try it. And I don't have the answers in front of me because the media is not my specialty, but I know we've got good people in our media committees.
Well, I know that people have said, we've got to do something different. You know, I've heard this before. You know, look at the numbers. You know, our numbers really, as far as reaching people, are fine. Even with television, there are far more people viewing it than maybe calling in and asking for some literature there. So that seed is being sown. But people say, well, let's do something different. And I say to them, what is it?
I hear what you're saying, but I think I would encourage people to go back to the message I gave. You mentioned I spoke at the GCE last year. I had a split sermon. And I talked about the title of it, Are You Ready? Right? Are you ready to speak the truth in love? Because that's really what we have. We're not going to water down the truth, right? I don't think any of us wants to water it down. But how do we speak that truth in love? Yeah. That's the challenge. And that's where, you know, we know what the truth is, but how is it delivered in a manner that people will receive it? And that's the big question. So to answer that question, we need to do something different. I agree, and I have the same response. But what is it? What is the difference?
I think you're really hitting on something when you're talking about speaking the truth in love. You know, being a preacher who exposits, you know, the Word of God, to do it in a way that people can trust. I know that this last letter that I sent out, we send out two massive letters to 250,000 people every year, one in May and one in December, that was offering the booklet, Are We Living in the Times of the End? Tremendous response. And we've had people that have really shown their interest by even being financially more supportive at a time that was hard.
Yeah, I think coming back to that point, I think one of the calls to action that we don't hear a lot, you know, in society, because, you know, as I'm traveling a lot, I'm channel surfing all the time, and I'll stop and listen to what other preachers are saying. And sometimes they say things on the radio that doesn't differ a lot. It's amazing, because sometimes you're like, wow, they're saying some of the same things that we know to be true. What they often miss is that call to action, right? Okay, these things are true. Therefore, there's a response. There's a call to action of responding to what is true. And that's, I think, something that the world doesn't hear. And I think that's usually becomes a challenge for most people, is that, okay, now that you know what the truth is, you need to take action in your life. And we know what that is. And Acts 2 talks about repent and be baptized. And so getting people to realize that they need to take action in their life is the real challenge, because people don't believe that today.
Well, we have three Beyond Today television programs that will be recorded here on Wednesday. We record three programs per month, and it's always the second Wednesday of the month. But we work on them all through the month. And these three are very heavily geared towards call to action. The Lord will do nothing except it reveals to his servants the prophets, you know. And that I believe is quoted in all three of the programs. But these programs are more call to action, so it'll be interesting to see if there's any broader response.
As I said, there's a lot of people on the radio talking about biblical prophesied events, and they're trying to decide, you know, is this Daniel 12? I mean, and so everybody's got this on their mind. Is this the time of the end? And so now is the time to get that message out that there is a way to respond. If you're thinking that way, there is a response. The Bible spells it out. Seek the Lord while he may be found. And then as you begin to understand these truths, and then there's a call to action and there's a way to respond. And then again, going back to my earlier point, if we as congregations can be ready to receive these people in love, in patience, and giving them time to grow, we can be that place that God can see. I can call people. I can bring them here. I can plant them there, and I can continue through that congregation, not just the pastor, the whole congregation. I can continue a work in that person, and they'll be a success. And so it brings it right back down to it's not only media. It's not only the pastor. It's the whole congregation understanding we all have a responsibility to be a living example.
Len, it's been great talking to you here. Thank you very much for coming down and being with us.
Thank you, Vic. My pleasure.
Well, thank you for joining us on Inside United this week. Remember to tell your friends about us. You can easily find us on ucg.org's homepage. Go to the menu bar and click on podcast. You can also find us using your favorite podcasting app on either Apple or Android. And now we're also on Spotify. Write to us at podcast@ucg.org. podcast@ucg.org. We'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to hear your impressions of this podcast. So goodbye. Come back again for more.
This is a production of the United Church of God. For more, visit ucg.org.